Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. As congressional Republicans push forward what Vice President Mike Pence calls the largest tax cuts since the days of Ronald Reagan, we caught up with South Dakota Congresswoman Kristi Noem yesterday. She serves on the House Ways and Means Committee, so we talked about the hallmarks of the GOP tax reform plan. But we also discussed the role of women in the international peace process and the continuing challenge of health care in Indian country. Take a listen.
I'm hoping we can start with your meeting on June 13th with Vice President Pence, and let's start with tax reform. Give me an idea of what you and the Vice President talked about as far as the congressional agenda.
Sure. Well, I serve on the Ways and Means Committee, which has jurisdiction over the tax code. On the House side and the administration, President Trump and Vice President Pence are very interested in doing comprehensive tax reform. And so we had a meeting a little while ago with the Vice President and talked about tax reform and some of the provisions that we had put out on the House side as far as a blueprint, what that would look like, some of the ideas that the White House was thinking about, and see if there was areas we could agree on how really to lower rates for everyone, create a simpler system, and really deal with the IRS as well, because one of the biggest complaints that we get consistently is about this agency that seems to have gone far beyond its job of making sure that people pay their taxes. It's really, really needs some accountability built into it as well. So a lot of our conversation dealt with the tax code and some specifics of it, the fact that we needed not just corporate tax reform for large businesses, but I'm very dedicated to getting small business reform and individual reform too, that we needed to simplify it for those families out there that need this economy to grow and in order to help their families and their livelihoods as well.
What are some of the hallmarks of the plan? We talk about simplification. What else are you thinking that sort of that we need to be really keyed into?
Well, for us and what we put forward that I've supported has been consolidating the current seven individual tax brackets down into three and then lowering each of those, creating a standard deduction that's larger than what it is today, but then also getting rid of all the loopholes and exemptions that are in the current tax code. We want to keep a provision for housing, you know, like the mortgage interest rate deduction. We want to keep a provision for charitable giving and retirement and education and healthcare. But beyond that, all of the different provisions and exemptions that are in the tax code, there's literally thousands of them, need to be evaluated. The proposal that we put forward on the Republican side, if that were signed into law, the vast majority of Americans could pay their taxes on a postcard,
right?
You know, which would change their lives. Americans spend $6 billion a year paying people to help them pay their taxes correctly. So if you change the system to the point where they could fill out a postcard and pay their taxes, I think they would absolutely love that. And that also leaves more dollars in their pocket for them to use for their family's needs. You know, the White House has proposals too. They want to adjust all of the rates as well. Their rates go lower than what our proposal was. And so that's what we're trying to figure out is how we go to lower rates and still make sure that we don't blow a hole in the budget to the point where we can't meet the needs of the country. And so that's the discussion that we're having. And I'm excited about it. You know, we haven't done tax reform in this country for over 30 years. And many of the other countries in the developed world have all done tax reform and they have lower rates than us. So for us to be competitive in this globalized market, we absolutely have to be competitive.
Vice President Pence said, we're going to pass the largest tax cut since the days of Ronald Reagan. We will get tax cuts done. We will get them done this year. Do you think it's possible in 2017 that you could see progress on this issue?
I do believe we will, because we have such leadership out of the White House that wants to get it done. This is a huge priority for the Vice President and for the President. And when you have leadership like that coming out of the White House on an issue, it helps guide the discussion. So Senate is still working on health care, and we need to finish that up. But we've, meanwhile, on the House side, been working on tax reform, and we're excited about it. So, Paul Ryan, our speaker, has also indicated that he believes it needs to get done in 2017. So to have that kind of agreement is something that we are going to need to get this signed into law.
Are the Affordable Care Act and the tax conversation, are they linked politically?
not necessarily politically, but I do believe that if we can get the health care reforms done, it does impact how we do tax reform, because when Obamacare was passed, there was dozens of taxes included in that bill that were on insurance policies. There was taxes on drugs. There was taxes on over-the-counter drugs. There was taxes on medical devices. And all of those were put into place to help fund the Obamacare law. But in our legislation to reform health care, we repeal all of those. So if we can get those repealed and start from that new baseline, it allows us to do tax reform in a manner that provides us better security for the future. So that's why health care was dealt with first of all, because we have a disaster situation with so many companies and policies leaving the market and families having no options, but also because if we do that, then we start from a place where we can have tax reform without having those waters muddied by those taxes still that were in place in the health care bill.
Are you satisfied, or are you paying attention to how that health care conversation is going in the Senate, and do you think that it's progressing the way that it should?
You know, I think it's progressing. We don't really get very involved in the Senate side. Right. You know, we did our health care legislation, and the nice part about legislating is that we have ideas on the House side. They have ideas on the Senate side. If they do pass a bill, we will go to a conference committee and then have a debate on the differences between the two bills and the policies and how they work for families across the country. So at that point is where we get back involved so that we can have one piece of legislation that we both agree on that we can send to the president.
All right, let's keep talking about the economy a little bit and tax reform. As Vice President Pence mentioned, the days of Ronald Reagan. Are there lessons from President Reagan's administration and his economic successes, his economic failures, that you have your eyes toward as you consider tax reform today?
Well, we certainly can point to the tax reforms and cuts that President Reagan did and see that we got growth in the economy when that happened. So we know historically, not just from that instance, but from other instances in the past, and not only in America, but in other countries, that when folks receive tax cuts, they have more dollars in their pocket, they reinvest in their small businesses, they hire more workers, they expand, and that adds to the kind of growth that we need to see. In fact, the blueprint that we put forward on the House side, there was analysis done by other tax organizations and the Tax Foundation that estimated just for our state of South Dakota, if we put these reforms in place, we could create over 5,000 new jobs in the state, that it would increase the after-tax income for a normal household by over $4,700 per year. Hmm. So that's all encouraging news, and I think every family in the state that hasn't gotten a raise or hasn't seen prices drop in a long time, love to have a little more money in their pocket to meet the needs of their family and maybe invest in a different home or a different car or be able to get a better health care plan, or they may want to reinvest in their small business and expand it while they have the opportunity to do so. So that's the kind of growth we've seen in the past through other tax reforms, and that's what we're looking towards in this kind of reform as well. Although if we do the kind of reforms that the White House is talking about, this could be the largest tax reform package we've ever done in history.
Wow. Challenges to overcome to get to that point?
Well, you know, tax reform's hard.
Right.
You know, it's just hard. And that's one of the reasons that we haven't done it here in the United States for close to 30 years. So I think everybody has different ideas. And, of course, if somebody has a special exemption or a loophole in the tax code today, they're going to be fighting to keep it. And that
right.
means that there's literally thousands and thousands of groups and organizations that don't want their special situation to change. But our goal has been focused on what's fair, what helps everybody, not just a special few, and we focus on making sure that we're growing this country so that it can provide all the opportunities for kids and grandkids that we had the opportunity to enjoy many years ago.
Take us behind the scene with that conversation with the Vice President. Other topics that you think are relevant to South Dakota?
You know, we talked a lot about how he was doing some of the things that the White House spends their time on. We talked about national security, you know, Ellsworth Air Force Base, and the fact that we have so many people in South Dakota that step up and serve our country. and how appreciative we were for all of our military men and women. The United States faces a lot of threats around the world, and we really believe that that they protect us and keep us safe so that we can pursue other things such as running businesses and raising families. And so we discussed that as well, and the need to make sure that our military had all the training and resources that they need to meet the challenges that they face each day.
Speaking of security, let's talk about the Women, Peace, and Security Act. I remember when that was news a while back, and now it's passed. Tell us what the genesis of that was.
Yes, this is a bill that I've been working on for the last couple of years, and really what the bill says is that when there are peace agreements ongoing, that there should be a woman involved, which doesn't sound like rocket science, but the statistics show us that if a peace agreement is negotiated and a woman is involved, it's 35% more likely to last at least 15 years than when a woman isn't at the table. And people don't think about this very often, but women are very impacted by conflict and in a very different way than men. You know, even in the discussion with ISIL, they use human trafficking and sex slavery to generate revenue to fund their terrorist activities. In many regions, when men are fighting wars, the women are the ones running the economy. They're raising the families. They're running the markets and the schools. So they know how the local economy is running and how it isn't working. And they have an insight that's completely different. So they need to be at the table when they're talking about different peace agreements and negotiations to make sure that it is one that's much more balanced and meeting the needs of those involved. So I'm excited about it that it passed unanimously through the House. We have a bill exactly the same in the Senate and have negotiated and worked hard with senators to get them informed on this legislation. I'm expecting that it could move over there and we could put it on the president's desk and really give us opportunities to not just have women at the table so the peace agreements are better, but the key here is to have them last longer, to have them be much more feasible and to really bridge the gap and mobilize coalitions that haven't been happening.
How does that play out in a real-world scenario?
Well, we've seen it already in Northern Ireland and South Africa, Somalia. They report that when women who had developed a reputation for building trust, engaging in all sides and fostering dialogues, that their negotiations went much better, that women that have been involved in high-level peace talks that produced in the 2014 peace process, they pushed for broader-based support, and that really made it much more successful in the long run. In Liberia, leaders organized Christian and Muslim women who together pressured parties into the 2002 negotiations. So we have many examples throughout history of where women were making the difference in these negotiations, and yet it still doesn't always happen. And so this is really putting it out there in statute saying this needs to be encouraged, that you will have more success if you include both men and women in these negotiations, and that it's vital for peace.
What has the response been from other lawmakers on it? What sort of conversations have you had?
You know, we started on this a few years ago, and at first they thought maybe it wasn't very necessary to really say that this needs to happen. But as we educated people, they were surprised by how much changed the dynamics of a peace negotiation and how much more successful it could be. And I don't think people really recognize how much women are impacted by war in
right.
these regions, that they really are picking up all the pieces of the society, and that many times they're being used as pawns as well. We've all seen and heard the stories of women being raped or being sold into slavery, and if they're being impacted and know what that issue is, they certainly should be at the table working to find ways to help it end. You know, women are kind of less likely to take up arms and to go to war, but they die in higher numbers from war's indirect effects, from the breakdown of the society and from abuses and the spread of diseases and economic devastation. So they're heavily impacted and they need to be a part of the solution.
Your name's on more things this month coming out, a couple involving substance abuse and dealing with substance abuse. Is that a topic that is top of mind for you right now?
It is, absolutely. Well, we have a huge problem across the country with substance abuse, drug abuse, and we're seeing it in South Dakota too, not just meth, but also opioids. And I've been alarmed by the trends that we're seeing and the increases. In fact, even the numbers in South Dakota have shown that violent crimes have doubled, that rapes have tripled in recent years, and a lot of it is tied to drug use. I just had a meeting a couple days ago, again, with the sheriff of Minnehaha County and also the chief of police in Sioux Falls, talking about the challenges that they face. And some of the bills that I had on the House floor this week had to do with helping children who are in families where there is substance abuse, helping the families not be separated if the parents were in treatment, but also making sure that we're taking care of kids who have been neglected. You know, and that what really resonated with me, that we were on the right track with these legislation, was that in talking with the chief of police and the sheriff, was that they said more and more every day they're seeing children who are, they're not necessarily being beaten, but they are deeply neglected. And I think we've all read stories and heard about it on the news about these children that haven't been fed and that are hoarding food in their bedrooms because their parents aren't caring for them. And so the point of these pieces of legislation was to coordinate efforts to help those types of situations and also to try to keep families together that really do want to heal and get off the substance addiction.
Hmm. Where is the conversation about Indian Health Services at right now? Another topic that comes up frequently.
I have a piece of legislation that would reform Indian Health Services. And in fact, today, just a few hours ago, I testified in front of a subcommittee of the Natural Resources Committee on the legislation. It's the first step on the process of putting this bill on the House floor and then through the Senate that would bring reforms to that agency. So it's a pretty comprehensive bill. It will put in some recruitment opportunities so we can get better employees and managers at these facilities. It puts in more reporting requirements. It makes sure that we have accountability within IHS, which we haven't had in the past as well. And it also improves patient care standards. It requires them to measure wait times and to not have situations where they aren't seeing the patients, and then also deal with the unique culture that we find in our tribal lands as well, that the employees that work there need to understand that, have training in that, and make sure that they're acting appropriately when they're delivering care in some of these most challenged areas. So it's a very comprehensive bill, but the wonderful thing about it is that we've worked hard with the Senate. There's identical legislation on the Senate side that will be moving as well. So we have a great opportunity to get this through the House and the Senate into the president's desk, and it'll bring big change to an agency that needs it desperately.
Give us an idea of how your job has really changed under President Trump's administration versus President Obama's administration. What's different for you?
You know, I guess I'm more hopeful, and that would be because a lot of the stuff that I've spent years working on wouldn't get signed by the President Obama. You know, tax reform wasn't something that he wanted to accomplish. Obviously, doing health care reform was very politically charged under his administration, and so now I've spent 6 years working on ideas and reforms we could make in those areas that now we have an opportunity, if we pass it through the House and the Senate, that the president could actually sign it into law. So I'm hopeful. We have these other bills. The IHS is something I've been working on for a long period of time. We've got great cooperation in the Senate. Also, I love how bipartisan it is and how bipartisan these bills are that we're working on that deal with substance abuse. And we're still doing work on a farm bill as well. So there's many areas that have been bipartisan always in the past, but now we see areas as well that have been controversial, such as health care and such as tax reform, that I think we've come together and found some agreement on some of the policies that we could put reforms forward that would be great for the families in South Dakota that could actually get signed into law and bring them much-needed help.
Much of the news we see coming out of Washington doesn't necessarily have the word bipartisan attached to it.
But there are
some things going on that are strongly bipartisan that you're optimistic about?
Absolutely. You know, I tell people, I turn on the news and I don't really recognize Washington, D.C. because what I do every day isn't reflected on the evening news. A lot of times they're talking about scandals or they're talking about polarizing issues. The good work that we're doing legislating every day just isn't getting covered many times. And so I think that's why people are discouraged. They don't necessarily know. They don't know that we've passed in the House already over 200 bills. 30 bills have been signed into law, that we have already removed many regulations that on a bipartisan basis, people recognized were harmful for families and businesses. So we've been more productive in this Congress than we have in many, many years. And that's probably not a topic you're going to hear very often when you turn on the evening news.
Congresswoman Noem, you've been generous with your time. I want to say thank you so much for that.
Absolutely. Thank you. Anytime. Love visiting with you.